The date, November 4th, 1994, and we are watching Double Dragon. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me this month for Video Game Month, my summer co-host, the Jimmy Lee to my Billy Lee.
What's up? I'm Aaron Knowles.
So, this week, we are looking back at November 1994, when the movies in theaters were Don Juan DeMarco, Squanto, A Warrior's Tale, Wes Craven's New Nightmare, Episode 81's subject, Little Giants, and of course, our movie for today, Double Dragon, which earned $2.34 million on a $7.85 million budget. I bet they wish those numbers were reversed.
Oh, that hurts.
Yeah, that does hurt a little bit.
That hurts.
Yeah. But I mean, you get the 234. That's fun.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah. Well, if you're worried about spoilers in this movie, then you probably believe the two main actors were actually teenagers. So be prepared.
Yeah. Yeah. I did not realize that even. Well, the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, well, I've got four of them this week. The first one, power, justice, darkness, light.
Before you continue, I got to share something. I think taglines might be like one of my favorite like parts of this entire show.
Yeah. It's a fun bit. I do like it. I at one point tried like put titles through Google Translate, because some titles are translated so bizarrely in other languages, and it's like I wasn't finding enough fun ones in my first few episodes, and I just gave up on that idea. Well, see, and so that first one, I mean, those are all individual thoughts. They all have their own period. So, like, is this just, you know, this is someone's Mad Lib list, you know? Give me a noun. Oh, okay, power. I don't know. Like,
this is when they were, like, when they were testing it in front of audiences. They're like, all right, give me a word. Everybody write down a word.
What are the sizzle words?
Whatever, you know, they think about with this movie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, number two. Evil has just met its match.
No.
And they didn't assign gender to evil, so that's nice of them. Evil has met its match.
Yeah, you can't identify evil.
Yeah. Well, number three, two halves of an ancient puzzle are the only hope.
I thought,
right?
It's a puzzle? It's not a puzzle. There's no puzzle.
Well, there's two pieces.
There's
as long as there's more than one piece, it's a puzzle.
How the fuck do these half moon
I mean, you know, I've been around baby toys.
Oh god.
There's some very simple puzzles out there.
Okay. Whatever.
Well, number four, finally, feel the power, live the legend. It's the ultimate kick. I like the ultimate kick. I just, you know, why not? Three ninjas knuckle up would say ultimate kick.
Yeah. I love, and that's the other thing is I love how none of these actually mention anything about it being a video game.
No. Why would you? I mean, you're busy showing the game itself in the movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, why would you mention that it's based on, I mean, I guess that could have been a tagline, based on the Potato classic.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know.
Loosely, period.
Loosely,
based, period. Video game, period.
Power, period.
Power, period.
Well, this doesn't say very much about the movie, so let's go to Aaron and get a 60-second synopsis.
All right, here we go. Whew. I never thought that I'd be tired of early 90s shticky fight films with superpowers and martial arts, but here we are. In a post-apocalyptic New Angeles, brothers Billy and Jimmy Lee and their hot stepmom, I mean guardian Satori, are the guardians of the sacred and powerful Double Dragon Medallion. Well, at least half of it. When out of their past, the man who murdered the kid's parents, but we're not going to talk about that, as well as rules, really just ignores all the rules of cultural appropriation, an evil white dude who is reborn as Coco Shuko, wields not only the once-thought-hidden half of the medallion, but a pretty badass pair of shades. Satori dies, turns into a force ghost. Them Lee boys go on an adventure with one of the Charmed Sister to stop Coco Shuko from doing anything else mildly racist, but they fail. And in the end, they reunite the two halves of the medallion, become the nerdiest ninjas on the planet, make annoying quips, and save the day. But back to you in the studio, Sean, because it's a hot one here in the apocalyptic California wasteland.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so Double Dragon. I mean, I know the game. I was more of a Final Fight player. For mm-hmm. some reason, I like that storyline.
River City
better.
Ransom, you know, Final Fight. Yeah, all those.
Yeah, yeah. But Double Dragon was one of those ones that I definitely played on my old systems, on my old 16-bit systems back in the day, or 8-bit systems even. It was one of those fun beat-em-up games. And then you see the movie, and the movie is like, okay, it's trying this. And this is one of those ones that I saw the movie once a long time ago, and then immediately forgot it. And then for some reason, saw it early COVID times on Amazon. It was on Amazon, and I'm like, oh, hey, I haven't seen this in a while. Why the hell not? So, yeah, I've seen this a total of 2 times in my life. And well, now, you know, 3. But, yeah, that's me and Double Dragon. Aaron, what about you? What kind of history do you have with Double Dragon?
It's Double Dragon! I have quite a deep but very superficial history with Double Dragon. I think that my brother and I used to watch this movie a lot.
Okay.
And I think it's because, you know, we grew up and we thought that it was mildly funny.
Yeah.
And really looking back at it now with, you know, adult eyes, is this... It's pretty fucking bad. It's pretty bad. Clearly, you know, the two lead actors are not teenagers, and they're supposed to be like teenagers.
Well, I know now that I'm watching it as an adult, I did make sure to Google what Alyssa Milano's age was.
Yes.
Before I decided to look at her in an unpleasant way.
Which they do in the film.
Yes. And she was 22, so I'm like, okay. Okay. I don't mind sharing their sentiment.
Yes, and she does live with her dad. Yeah. So I always felt this was like Three Ninjas and RoboCop. Number one, the first one, had a baby and made a movie.
Yeah.
So okay. I don't know. I was entertained by certain things in this movie, but like watching it nowadays, I'm like, this doesn't make any sense at all. It's
really,
so offensive. And also like, it's funny because they took a movie that has even less of a story and less of lore than Super Mario and made a terrible movie about it.
And Street Fighter.
And Street Fighter, yeah. Street Fighter at least had, like, some lore. I mean, yeah, there was a little bit of lore in Double Dragons. But to be honest, in Double Dragons, the game, they weren't even, like, really good guys. They fought dirty. They were dirty Street Fighters.
And in the end, don't you have to fight your brother in order to... Yeah.
Yeah, you,
that,
it's
that
a fight
to the death. That was
what
the ending was. Yeah, you had to, only one can survive. There can be only one Highlander. Yeah. Yeah.
There could be only one Double Dragon.
Exactly. Because that makes sense with the name. Well, let's jump into Double Dragon. Directed by James Yukich, who is almost exclusively like a music video and comedy concert director. Produced by Jane Hampshire, Don Murphy, Alan Schechter, Ashley R. Shaw, and Sunil R. Shaw. And written by Paul Dini, Neil Schusterman, Michael Davis, and Peter Gould. Always a good sign when this many people are involved in production and the writing of a movie. Yeah, so there we go. And so we open this movie with the voiceover about the ancient medallion and the legend of Double Dragon. And so there you go. If you were missing any explanation from the game, you know everything now. And then we cut somewhere in China, just vaguely, just a nice vague somewhere in China, no time, no nothing. Yeah, but we get to see Al Leong. Al Leong is he's the bad guy of the 80s and 90s. You know, he's in Lethal Weapon, he's in Die Hard, he's... It's always a good time when Al Leong shows up in a movie.
He's like the Swiss Army Knives of evil dudes.
Yeah. Oh, he's awesome. And, you know, one of the legitimately diverse cast members in this movie.
Yes.
Of which, as you mentioned, a whole lot of appropriation going on. I mean...
I gotta say one thing about Al Leong. One of my favorite introductions to him in any role, in any character, is... I want to say my first favorite is Big Trouble in Little China when he's leading his gang like out of the smoky alley.
Yeah.
And then I want to say he's like one of the bad guys in, it might be Scorpion King when he shoots the arrow at the stomach of like his boss.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. I see. I just like the candy bar in Die Hard.
Yes.
That's one of my favorite Al Leong moments. But how's that for a nice swift segue into, let's talk about this cast, this hugely diverse and star-studded cast that we have going on here.
Oh, God. Okay. Well, you got your main villain, Koga Shuko, and his name's like Geisen, like I forget his first name, but something Geisen. He's not even like on the cast, he's not even known as his actual name. He's just known by his
culturally appropriated assumed name,
which is Koga Shuko, and that's Robert Patrick. And you know, Robert Patrick's one of those another Swiss Army knife of Hollywood. You know, T1 or T2000, you know, or T1000 in Terminator. He's in The Faculty, Fire in the Sky. Good villain.
Good villain, absolutely. And hateable in The Peacemaker, too. Wasn't it Peacemaker? Peacemaker's dad? Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah,
Dragon.
One thing I notice about, because we've been watching all these movies from this time, there is something about bleach blonde villains. We've got Dennis Hopper in Super Mario Brothers. Mm-hmm. You know, Demolition Man came out around the same time. Yeah. And I noticed a lot of parallels to Demolition Man in this movie. But, you know, you've got Wesley Snipes with his bleach blonde. I mean, it's just something about this look of villain is that was the 90s, early 90s villain.
Is that why I hate Frosted Tips?
Maybe.
It might be a good reason I'm not a fan of Guy Fieri.
It would valid, very valid, absolutely.
Oh man! Well, we got Mark. Now this guy Mark Dacascos as Jimmy Lee, who, again, these are two brothers.
And were you a Hawaii Five-0 watcher?
I mildly.
I remember him as Woe Fat. He was a reoccurring bad guy in that. He was like the one guy's nemesis in that.
Well, he's been in John Wick, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Chicago PD, Mortal Kombat Legacy, Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. Well, the sequel's not the actual movie, so don't get me wrong there. He's I want to say he's more prominent because of his fighting skills.
Mm-hmm.
And so he tends to get thrown into roles like that, but he's done a ton of stuff, mostly, I'm gonna say, probably mostly B stuff.
He is an impressive martial artist.
Yes.
And I couldn't help but thinking, with the fact that they did such a good job of culturally appropriating the villain, you know, this guy doesn't really look like a Koga Shuko to me. Maybe they could have cast someone different in that role. But early 90s, it's almost like, well, okay, Mark Dacascos is Asian, but he's safe Asian. You know, he's Brandon Lee Asian, you know? Yes. He looks very Brandon Lee-like, and it's like, okay, you know, we have our person of color up there, but he's not that Asian looking, so he's safe. I feel like there's a lot of early 90s mentality where, yeah, I could see that. I don't know. because as his brother, you have possibly like the whitest guy to roam the earth.
Who everybody was mad about because he wouldn't dye his hair blonde to actually match the character, which is slightly funny. You got Scott Wolf as Billy Lee. Now, Scott Wolf, Party of Five. Nancy Drew, Night Shift. Not really. I mean, I don't really know. I know he's recognizable, and it might be because this movie is just like ingrained in my brain, but I really haven't seen him in a lot of stuff.
He was in some slasher flick, wasn't it? It was either one of the Scream movies or one of the I Know What You Did Last Summer movies.
You're right. I think he was. What was that one? Oh, he was in Blossom, Saved by the Bell, The Skid Kid, Party of Five. I don't see. Maybe not. Maybe somebody just looked like him. He was in V.
V? No. No, that wasn't it.
No, doesn't look like he was in any of that.
Okay, well then, I really don't know Scott Wolf from anything, because I didn't even watch Party of Five. I know of him from Party of Five, but not because I know Party of Five.
Yeah. And then you got, you know, then you have, moving on a little bit forward, you got Julia Nixon, who played Satori. And she's not really been in a lot, like she was in like Babylon 5, you know, she's got some uncredited stuff that's recent, but I don't know. Like, I feel like, again, a lot of these celebrities, it's hard for me to be like, oh yeah, I've seen them in something, but maybe I might've made it up because I just remember them from this movie, you know, and it's traumatized me to where, you know, I've seen it, but you know, she's done a lot of stuff, like, again, like JAG, The Marshal, Chicago Hope, Babylon 5, Deep Space 9. So she could have been in one of those like random like episodes that I watch.
Yeah.
You never know. Airwolf, for crying out loud. Magnum PI, you know?
Nice.
And then you have, you know, we're going to go a little bit further. Christina Wagner as Linda Lash. She was basically the whip carrying sidekick to Kogashuko.
The whip, just the weapon that makes the least amount of sense.
exactly. I don't know. It was only really a reference to the video game, because I think it was her, Linda Lash, Jimmy Lee, Billy Lee, and Marion, who are the only four characters from the game who actually show up in the movie. So that's why she has her whip, because that was like
Bobo isn't?
No, so Bo Adobo is actually based off of, there are the Adobo brothers. Okay. There's like three or four of them. There's like Joe, and there's like, at the end, there's like this big, massive, like biomutant Adobo.
Yeah, big jacked up guy. That's what I remember. Yeah.
And that's who, you know, Bo Adobo is based off of, that character specifically. But yeah,
kind of an amalgamation.
Exactly. Yeah. So Christina Wagner is basically, you know, she did a Lowdown Dirty Shame with one of the Wayans brothers, and General Hospital, Double Dragon, and not a whole lot, to be honest. So she's pretty much been doing General Hospital for about 19 years or 39 years, looks like.
Oh yeah, okay.
We'll go a little bit faster. Alyssa Milano, you know, we all know her from Charmed.
Oh yeah.
She looked.
Well, no, we all know her from Who's the Boss. Well, that's why I had to double check her age.
Yes. Who's the Boss and Charmed. Yes.
different generations here. Her actual real life little brother is in this movie.
Yes, yes.
Playing her little brother, Corey Milano, is in this movie, yeah. Which is interesting.
I thought that was I thought they probably had very good chemistry on screen for that particular reason.
Yeah, exactly.
I would say that if anybody, she was probably the best, like probably the best acting chops and the best actor on the set.
Yeah.
Other than probably, you know, maybe Robert we'll go a little bit further into the cast. But to me, it was like, you look at all these people who had stuff going on to a degree in their careers around this time frame. Mm-hmm. And it's like, why this film?
Yeah.
Why?
What drew you to this?
Alyssa Milano. So yeah, Marion Delario, she looked great. Nils Allen Stewart, who played Bo Adobo, you know, normal Bo Adobo before he got the molecular steroids.
Isn't it still him in the suit?
It's not.
That's not him in the makeup?
That's not. Oh, okay. Oh, somebody named Henry Kingy.
Oh, wow. They Lou Ferrigno'd it.
Yep.
Wow. Okay.
Now, Nils Allen Stewart, he's been in a few things. I think he was, he looks like one of the, he seems like one of those guys who's like a typical henchman, and he's got this like little, he's bald with like this little like ponytail on the back that's like always braided.
he looks like he could be in Griff Tannen's squad, you know, yes. in Back to the Future Part 2, like the futuristic squad that Griff Tannen has, right?
He also looks like a porn star.
No, I mean, that. Really, like, I was scrolling the other day and I saw him.
But he's, again, he's been, he, this guy has been in a ton of shit. He was in Daredevil, Planet of the Apes. He was in Galaxy Quest. I mean, he does a lot of stunts. So this guy is
a working physical actor.
He's a big
actor.
Stunts guy.
Okay.
Charlie's Angels, like Inside Out, House of the Dead, Aragon, Reno 911. Like, you name it, this guy has probably coordinated stunts or done stunts in just about, looks like everything. It's just, it's crazy how much he's been into.
Yeah, it's like, if you need a creature, go give Doug Jones or Andy Serkis a call. Yes. You know?
Let's see, anybody else?
There are a few important people to mention, of course.
Yes.
Vanna White. George Hamilton, and Andy yes. Dick. The news yes, and, team over at Channel 69.
Yes. Oh my god. You guys are crazy. So you got Andy Dick is not the weather, he is the smog caster. That's what he's listed as.
The smog caster,
in the credits. He is the smog caster. But yeah, I mean, again, a very sporadic and interesting cast.
How did they get Vanna White?
I don't know.
Was it like a Make-A-Wish situation or something? Where this kid, some kid wanted a Double Dragon movie made as a dying wish. And he's like, and I want Vanna White to be in it. And Andy Dick, because he makes me laugh. And somehow they pulled off that cameo.
I feel like they just like one. They were filming one day on set, and they're like, "Hey, we need a news feature. We need something to cut to. Let's see who's outside, like smoking a cigarette."
It just happened. They're like on the same lot where Wheel is filmed. Okay.
Yeah. And like Vanna White, would you like to make an extra $60 bucks? And she's like, "Yeah sure. My arms are tired.
Do I have to lift my arms? Okay, cool. Yeah." Oh, see, okay, that makes sense. I could see that scenario playing out. Yeah. Oh, boy. So Robert Patrick just can't get away from being some guy that just melts into something. He can't get away from being a special effects darling.
You're right. Yeah. he has to become, like, fluid. He has to become some kind of, like, non-human...
Material, yeah,
shadow, like something yeah. translucent, transparent, whatever. But oh my god. So what Sean is referring to is he's referring to when we first really see Kogashuko showing up and like trying to get the piece from the
he comes
the medallion. He shows up at the movie theater, which is where Billy and Jimmy Lee and Satori all live, which is a weird situation. Why their home of record is a movie theater. Kogashuko shows up with his little entourage and he has to crack his knuckles around this medallion, like turn himself into a shadow person. Yeah. You know,
I feel like we need to do a wraith.
Power over the spirit. He becomes a spirit form, perhaps.
Yeah.
But we need to address something with this whole crew and their sunglasses, okay? Because they all have their synchronized sunglasses removing. At one point, Kogashuka's in his office, and somebody turns lights on. And he threatens, he's like, "Not before I get my shades on."
Yeah, that's
you know,
right.
I don't really. I can't take him serious as an evil conqueror.
Are they coked out and like the lights just too much?
Yeah. Probably. Again, we also need to visit the question of how are we funding this operation?
Mm. Yes, that comes up quite often. I just have to assume that Kogashuka is from money.
Yes.
Because here's one thing I noticed, and I'm going to tell you about it in Sponsorship Corner. Oh boy, why not? So always on the lookout for product placements in movies, this week Double Dragon is brought to you by Cheese Whiz, but they did a pretty good job of like not showing the label a lot. Mm-hmm. But I'm still going to allow it. I mean, full disclosure, like, I know I play it kind of fast and loose with sponsors sometimes. I'm like, I know what that is. I'm going to count it. Why not? Even though it's not very prominent. There is some greeking going on. And, you know, greeking is when they kind of distort the label slightly. Mm-hmm. And there's some going on, but I'm like, eh, they didn't do it well enough. I'm going to count it. But anyway, there was Kellogg's Rice Krispies, but it was labeled Shuko Krispies. So apparently Shuko just like owns everything, right? Except the top flap, they didn't put a Shuko label there. So it still says Kellogg's Rice Krispies on the top flap.
You know, someone got lazy.
Yeah, Dad is eating out of that, eating some Kellogg's Rice Krispies, Shuko Krispies, Converse shoes, Pontiac cars, Tato, the maker of Double Dragon, and of course the actual Double Dragon video game. It's like, you know, some Inception situation going on here. Whoa, the game inside the game. And Campus Shoes, if that's real, and Diesel Clothing, which is written prominently on Alyssa Milano's left breast, and it was a pleasure to find that one. One of the reasons why I googled her age. I can't forget Channel 69 News, of course, Shuko Corporation, and Jack City.
And if you don't call Jack City, you don't know Jack.
City. City. Boy. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. So I did notice that several things were labeled Shuko, so he's got a successful business going on. So unlike Valid. M. Bison from our previous Street Fighter episode, I think that this guy actually has some funding.
That would make a lot of sense, you know, because he's probably invested, you know, he's probably invested in a lot of things. He's, you know, he clearly has a mind for business because he knows the kids want their sugary cereal, you know, and obviously this New Angeles post-apocalyptic world, you know, people need their air boxes, their like, you know, breathing their air masks. You know, because the air is not breathable.
Their vending machine air. They've got their curfew in place. All these problems. They've got jacks holding up buildings because they've got this very tenuous grasp on the crust of the earth. People are still choosing to live in this hellscape for some reason. It makes me wonder, kind of like I did back with Demolition Man, but is the whole country this kind of hellscape, or is it kind of has this New Angeles just become it's you know, a lawless entity of its own?
It is lawless, much like much like RoboCop, doing a reference to RoboCop. The cops are not doing their jobs. They're basically closing up shop and letting the gangs run Los Angeles at night. And then coming back to work in the morning and having day shift cops. So that's one thing that
it's like the Purge, but every night.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And that's what allows guys like Bo Adobo to drive around a giant, what looks like a bank truck.
With
extended axles and like joystick driving computers and they're basically running people off the road when clearly the only two people in this movie that own vehicles or three people the only three people in this movie that own vehicles are Kogashuko and his limo, Bo Adobo and his massive ice cream truck, and the Lee brothers and their station wagon.
I guess
it's the dragon wagon.
The dragon wagon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, which runs on an open flame. Yeah. You have to have, you got to stoke the furnace to,
yeah,
to keep it going. That, yeah, that doesn't seem like a practical mode of transportation.
And the flame is always going, because at one point they you know, when they first encounter Adobo, they're like knocked off to the, you know, to the side of the road, and he goes to try and start the vehicle to get out of there. But when the camera pans the outside of the vehicle, the flame is still going.
Yeah. To bring up another Back to the Future reference, we've got like a Mr. Fusion situation going
yes,
on, maybe.
Very much so.
Yeah.
A very, very, I would say this one is probably a little bit more practical. So you don't have to stop the car to fill up with trash.
True. Yeah. It's inside. Yeah. No, yeah. That it is an upgrade. Yeah. Do they ever like say a time?
Nope.
Like, no, it's just some. Okay. Okay. And I do appreciate the Mad Max-ness of all the cars that are going on. You know, like you mentioned, like the Brinks truck that's all armored up extra, and it is still fun.
It's interesting because they, not a single time, put any trash into their Brinks furnace.
Well, maybe they have different technology.
True, true.
I don't drive an electric car, but I know they're out there.
True. Maybe this is an electric Brinks truck, which also leads me to, you know, that was the question I had earlier about, you know, Kogashuko having a lot of money, which we've clearly already answered, because he has a gene steroid inducing chair, or a molecular steroid administering chair, you know, in his what looks like to be a mid-level parking garage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where I'd keep mine.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very much a Lucius Fox lab setup.
Yo, the underground garage type setting. Yeah. Why not?
I think that's where Batman probably got his idea, or at least Lucius Fox did. He watched Double Dragon and was like, I need a parking garage / cement area to set up my lab and equipment. Thank you, Double Dragon.
Well, maybe it's like an actually like a 6-story garage, and that section is just closed off to the public.
Mm-hmm.
But they actually make an income from the other 5 levels. That's how they finance. And that's the beginning of the Shuko Corporation is he's basically just in park.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's right next to the airport.
Exactly. That's how you get them.
Massive long-term influx of cash. Parking.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. There we go. We just solved it.
Solved the subplot.
We really solved it. So because it's a cheesy 90s video game, I got to say, again, like Super Mario Brothers, at least they went for it. I appreciate the swing because it's a hell of a swing. But boy, the 1993 or 4, whatever it is, special effects, just do not hold up. Out his window, his view is terrible.
The view out of his window, the CGI from when they're driving their car. You know, and they have like the top down map, or like the bumper cam.
The bumper cam. The bumper cam was one of the weirdest things. Why would you have this device that sends you back a digital picture?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't it just be a camera?
Exactly. And then it shows you the real time like damage as you're like hitting the vehicle. It's just like that's totally blocking your view. So that's so impractical.
But you can tell, though, that it was the director going, oh, this is how we're going to bring the video game into it. We're going to see that hit points are going down and stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Ooh, yeah. So that's the other thing. It's very, I want to say, like, montage-y. And I don't necessarily mean, like, there's a lot of montage. I'm saying this movie itself flashes really quickly through the story. Mm-hmm. And none of it really makes a whole lot of sense because, you know, you've got like the chief of police, you know, his daughter is Marianne, you know, Marianne, got to remember her name.
DeLuco or no?
Delario. Delario. Okay. So Chief Delario is Marianne Delario's father, and she runs a little underground rebel crew called the Power Corps. Mm-hmm. And they have their own very, two things I want to address. The Power Corps headquarters, which is like the anti version, like the opposite version of Shredder's, like Kid Park.
Footlayer.
They got video games. They got skating. They got games. The hangout zone. They're all.
Is that water toxic though? The green water.
It probably is.
Because in the fight, anytime anyone falls in, they never come back up.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's also a danger layer.
Oh, absolutely. No corners are softened. You know, there's very sharp corners. Yeah. But this thing, it's like, again, this is like the church camp version of the Foot Clan's hideaway.
Yeah. Gotcha.
So that's one thing I wanted to bring up. And then also, there's a scene in this movie where Kogoshuko meets with all of the gangs and their leader. And it's like in this, I don't even know. It's like this room, like a gladiatorial chamber where there's multiple layers and you got a bunch of like, you know, gang members, and they're all like shouting their opinions over the edge. And at one point, Kogoshuko chokes out the main gang member, the gang leader, chokes him out. And he's just standing there with his arms up, like in the wings of an angel type thing. And there's just like this massive gust of wind and smoke machine. And it's very like chaotic. I have no idea what's going on, but it's just
you know what that room is. It is part of his parking structure that he has. He has this one area in the center, you know, and he can put up his sign closed for a private function. And so they've all come to the railings and they're yelling over the edge. But yeah, it's this one part in the center of his parking
structure.
Got it.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It's like a wind tunnel or something.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's where the fans that evacuate the, you know, M. Bison's gas chamber.
His lab underneath, that's where that's his ventilation.
So that sounds pretty practical. That makes sense.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to waste space. I mean, it's, you know, waste not want.
It's Los Angeles. There's not a lot of real estate left, you know?
That's right, yeah.
It's only shrinking.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
As the floodwaters rise to Hollywood and Vine.
So now we haven't even talked about the brothers. I mean, when Kogoshuko gets his half of the necklace, we of course get the immediate "Where is the second half?" and it jumps to it around the neck of the girl who is, you know, in the middle of being the coach of these brothers who are in the middle of a tag team match. And I do have to say, the fighting is actually kind of legit.
Yeah, it's like, not bad.
You know, there are some good fight scenes in this movie.
Again, I'm just going to state that in this particular match that we're watching, which is obviously sponsored by Jack City, these are supposed to be two teenage boys fighting against who I'm assuming are two other teenage boys.
It's Daniel LaRusso and Johnny Lawrence out there, fighting.
But they're so old. They're so old.
Yeah.
It's like they're like fighting 30-year-olds.
I assume they were supposed to be 20s. Like I didn't realize that they were going for teenage.
It's pretty bad.
If there was a line, I missed it. Yeah, because the girl that's with them she looks older. So I assume they were in the same age bracket, at least. You know, if they had to fill out a survey, they wouldn't be checking separate boxes. They'd still be in the same range.
I feel like they made her a little bit older and also
wiser.
Asian. Wiser. Because they wanted to make her more kind of like a Splinter character.
That's why she's Asian. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is because she's wiser. She's Mr. Miyagi.
Yes.
It's just like the fabled, magical black man that comes help your white protagonist in a lot of sports movies. You know, this
or
is
Die Hard.
The, or Die Hard, yeah. This is the mystic Asian that, you know, comes in and...
Actually, every Die Hard. Yeah. If you think about it. Yeah. Anyways.
I was thinking more of the Legend of Bagger Vance was more what I was
that
thinking.
That too.
So I also enjoyed the car chase. I thought the car chase was pretty legit as well.
Yeah. Again, I don't remember seeing a lot of other vehicles on the road.
No. But between those two cars.
Yeah, between those two, it was definitely a good because it didn't seem like they were pulling any punches when they were like smacking into each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean I do like the whole boxing them in strategy and everything like that, but I do have to address one thing with this car chase. Is they zoom all through the city, and then they're finally, you know, have outrun them. They're going down that alley, and they're about to crash into the wall. It is revealed at that point that the power core has been hiding, camouflaged against that wall the whole fucking time. You're saying that the power core is all badass enough that none of them were like, oh shit, that thing's gonna crash into us, and flinched? None of them flinched?
Nope.
Wow.
They're too badass. They knew.
She's got some good soldiers.
Yes. She's brainwashed them with green water.
Yeah. I like their disguises, though. I still, you know, I thought that was clever.
Just, it always, so that always reminds me of Grandma's Boy. When he's got his, like, leather jacket up, he's like, how can you see me?
Oh, man, I haven't seen Grandma's Boy in so long.
Funny enough, it's been a while for me, too. I just can somehow remember everything from all the movies. It's a terrible superpower.
Yeah, I used to be able to. Like, when I worked at a Blockbuster Video, it's like I knew everything about everything. And then the smartphone came out, and I didn't have to know anything about anything.
Nobody, you don't have to, you know, comprehend or remember anything these days.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, man.
But when they show up, we get a bit of a boss battle, though. Like, when they crash into that alleyway, and we get, like, great lines like, hey, Broomhead, we're going to sweep the floor with your skull. Boy, there were some A+ one-liners in this movie.
There was some good ones. There were some good ones, for sure.
But the power core scares them off, and we basically, this is the point where we get to the theater, which you mentioned way at, you know, earlier, because of him turning into the shower. Do you think they choreographed that sunglass removal?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely. There's no way. Like, there's no way anybody would just, like, I don't know.
I'm not even talking the actors.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, like, as henchmen, if you're actually in this universe, do you think they're like, okay, guys, it's 9:30, we have rehearsal.
Yes. Yeah.
Just every night they got to run drills?
Mm-hmm. They got together, like, probably after dinner, maybe before they sat down and read a little bit of their romance novel, and said, okay, let's just practice on three.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
How many hours have they put in? And they're like, this is the moment, boys.
This is it.
We got it. This is it.
Glasses
going into
off.
This theater. Glasses
God
off.
Damn it, Joseph.
You're supposed to go on three.
Fuck. Oh, I thought it was 1, 2, 3 go. Is it 1, 2, 3 go? Or is it 1, 2 go? Are we going on three?
You have the whole Lethal Weapon toilet debate. Yeah.
Yeah. Get too old for this shit.
Yeah. Satori gets blowed up, though, ultimately in the theater.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's when we really find out what her name is, because Scott Wolf yells it at least 37 times.
And he just wants to get back in the theater.
Yeah. Satori! No.
Satori! And then also somehow Bo Adobo survived that explosion as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that was one that was impressive, yeah. That was a lot of gas that they were pouring down that aisle.
Right? I
mean, it like flooded down there.
It was like frothy gas. I've never seen that before.
It's like, oh my God. Pull out the slip and slide, guys.
I just thought it was funny, though, that the fire had to go for that long when there was a broken gas pipe. That was just literally like vomiting gas into the whole place.
For a long time. That thing got broken early in that fight. Yeah.
Satori! Satori!
And then like the brothers, they get all mopey, right? And they have their big, you know, this is for your Oscar consideration scene. Yes. You know, like the the one between the brothers where they just go through a whole range of emotions in about 3 minutes grieving over Satori.
Acceptance, denial, anger, all the steps. All the steps. The big, you know, Billy's being a dick and throwing the Jimmy's fucking box, you know, into the water. Why'd you do that, butthead? You know, they're talking to each other like teenagers. It's a moment, you know. Yeah. Engage with your feelings, gentlemen.
And somewhere in there, we have that scene that you mentioned where he is taking the power, where he's got everyone chanting his name in the weird garage area.
Yeah.
And you had mentioned that actor previously, the Hills from Have Eyes actor. You know, so give him a shout out. You mentioned him in another episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm trying. I want to say it's Michael Berryman. Yeah. Michael Berryman, who is he's the maniac leader.
Yeah. You know? A shadow strangling power seems pretty cool.
Yes. Yes. And he said, what did he say to him? I don't remember the scene, but he had a pretty good quip when he was like, you know, like, when did you get an opinion? You know, and I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah. When the brothers, going back to the brothers fighting and then acceptance and all that, what is it that's in the lunchbox that Jimmy threw away?
I thought it was pictures. It was like pictures of them and Satori.
Okay. I don't remember that lunchbox from any previous scenes. So I'm like, why has this been given so much weight and focus right now as it was sinking into the water? once they reconcile, it's like, what's this lunchbox? I didn't get it. Like, was it something that was supposed to be thrown into the car furnace at one point that he's like, no, anything but that?
Maybe it was like a deleted scene where he was like packing stuff up or something earlier, you know? Who knows?
Yeah, or it's just like, fuck you and your egg salad sandwiches. I fucking hate egg salad.
Macadamia nut cookie? Fuck that.
So Kogashuko, though, ends up putting a bounty on their heads, I guess.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we've got clown gangs and...
Oh my god, we got clown gangs, after that, there's like a boat, there's not, wait, this is before the boat chase. But there's a, you know, this whole, I want to say it was in like a junkyard, but pretty much all of LA at this point is a junkyard. So there's this big fight between like all the different clown, like the gangs. You got the clowns, you got what look like mimes, you've got the postal workers.
The postal workers. What the fuck? It was such a weird hodgepodge that it's like, okay, this is what they're doing. Why not?
Like, this is a weird choice, but all right.
Like the guys with the sunglasses, how long do you think the Lee brothers worked on their weird docking high five that they do, where it's the fist in the palm?
Tiger claw. I don't know. It's terrible though. You ever watch Community?
Yeah, yeah.
That was always my favorite, like, handshake. Was
the Ahmed chest. and yeah.
Trying our bed in the morning.
Oh boy. After they beat a bunch of them, then yes, we get the boat race. You mentioned the boat whatever. Where we got the Hollywood boat tour happening on the flammable river. Apparently the river they filmed on has actually lit fire before. It's a river in Ohio that at one point was so polluted that there were actually fires on this river.
So terrible.
Yeah. Man. But yeah, I enjoyed the Hollywood boat tour.
Yes.
I thought that was actually kind of a fun little touch.
It was.
Like, this whole city, they explained this city without really explaining this city. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense, and they're like, yeah, but don't worry about that because now we're going to throw this next thing at you.
You're watching and you'll think about it for a moment, but then you'll just be like, just move on, and your brain can't bring it to any kind of justification to it.
Yeah, now they're on flammable water. I mean, I don't know if there's anything that's much more scary than flammable water. You know, you either drown or burn to death. Oh my god. It's terrible.
And then, because then they somehow fool the gangs and the Kokushuko people that are chasing them by, I didn't see them jump out of the boat, but apparently they smash their boat into the sign. Mm-hmm. It explodes and they've mm-hmm. jumped off to safety, but the people, you know, like send in the divers so they can find the medallion, you know, type situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I had no idea. It would have been nice to have had a flashback or some sort of indication that shows how they actually survived it, but whatever. No, we're on to the next thing.
And that's the Power Core hideout.
Yeah, with Marion's spinach torture.
Oh my god. Yeah.
I don't even understand. Like, I'm no scientist. I understand that. But I don't think the spinach is getting through that funnel at the rate that she is dumping it into the funnel. It does not seem possible. There would have to be suction coming from him, and he is not providing suction.
Yeah, I mean, unless he just really loves spinach and he's just like, oh, God, this is torture, but oh, keep going.
Yeah, oh, God, anything but this. It's like, you know, if you could trick the devil, if you get to hell, into, oh, the worst thing in the world would be just endless blowjobs. Oh, God, that would be such torture. Please, anything but that. That would be my nightmare. And anything but a beautiful woman doing it. There we go. I realized that there would have been genie sneakiness going on with the
yes,
devil.
He'd be like, oh, very much so.
Okay, Hitler will be giving you a blowjob.
Jesus Christ.
Oh no, the episode has devolved into Hitler. Jesus. So let's go back to Shuko's office instead. Where they are breaking into Shuko's office, so that we have gone back to the Power Corps headquarters, picked up Marion to go break into Shuko's office.
Yes.
And these young men, of course, do not listen to Marion about what she wants to do. They instead go fishing for the medallion.
Yes, using string, which, where did that come from?
Well,
really?
He was unwinding it by the thing, water's edge before Jimmy came and threw his lunchbox away.
True.
So maybe it was a lunchbox full of twine. It's like, well, this is all I got left now.
Luckily.
This one fishing line.
You want to throw this into the water too, Billy? Yeah, they use that pin and the string to try and fish for the piece of the metal. But are they successful, Sean?
How so?
Well, I mean, they run into some problems, don't they?
They do. Yeah, well, they definitely do, because, oh my god, Marion's dad is meeting with him.
Yeah, exactly. They now she has to listen to Kogashuko and her father have a meeting, and he's basically threatening her father.
Mm-hmm. But of course they fall through the ceiling and everyone finds out who everyone is, they have to escape riding elevator cables down with their bare hands.
Oh my god. See, come when they when, on. When they have when
that's
they start
at
like
at least one or two splinters at
oh
least.
My god. Speaking of Die Hard, you know, do you remember when he had to pull that piece of cable out of his back,
right? Yeah. And oh, in Vengeance. God. Absolutely. Yeah.
Whenever I think about people touching cables like that, that's what automatically comes to my brain, is him just pulling that out.
But no, they have no problem scaling down these ropes at high speed with just their hands.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You are not firefighters. It's not the same as one of their poles. This is going to...
maybe
you're not going to have hands left by the time you get to the
maybe
bottom.
In post-apocalyptic New Angeles, they've somehow gained the ability to have impenetrable hand flesh.
Okay, some sort of leathery... okay.
Mutation.
Yeah.
A fluke of evolution.
Or they're just so calloused from being badass martial artists.
That's true.
Yeah, they've been out there doing the, you know, one-inch punch on a stump out in the middle of somewhere, you know?
Kill Bill style.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, we get the bodies coming to life in the cryo chamber. Somehow this ride down where their hands are perfectly fine at the bottom. They end up in the cryo chamber area and, like, all the bodies start coming to life and shit like that.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that, because Shuko's like using his spirit form to take over the
to
bodies.
To possess all the bodies. Yeah.
I forgot about that. That literally just blocked out of my brain, because he had like, there was that, it was almost a boss fight scene.
And then they turn on the big fan.
Yeah.
And like somehow suck his shadow out and obliterate it, and they think he's dead.
They think they've won.
I love in the cryo, Alyssa Milano poses like she's about to fight with the Lee brothers.
Oh, yeah.
And then just ducks out of the way. She's in charge of that switch. She's got the fan switch.
Yes. She is a fan.
She's got it locked down.
Of the Lee brothers.
Yeah. And then when she does fight the Linda Lash... And Linda Lash throws out, "Now who's the boss?" She apparently, there's a General Hospital reference that is made as well about.
Oh, I didn't catch that one.
Yeah, and neither did I, but it was one that I read about in trivia.
There is at one point where the two like twin brothers come in, the Asian henchman, and he's like, "Huey, Lewis, what's the news?"
Yeah, yeah, there's that one. Yeah. Was Scott Wolf already on part of Party of Five? Like, how was there no Party of Five reference?
I thought he was.
Yeah. Like, he counts five henchmen. Oh, Party of Five, right this way. You know, something like that. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure I've used that joke before, sadly.
The fight somehow ends up back in the... Power core lair,
which also is ran by a giant generator that somehow they can still interact, and it's not a very loud facility with that giant ass generator there as well.
Yeah, it's quite the impressive generator that they got going on, except it never fucking works. It's always breaking down.
Party of Five was after Double Dragon.
Oh, so they saw his performance in Double Dragon and went, "That guy.
Yep.
That's who we need opposite.
That's the one.
Nev Campbell? I want to say. Who's in Party of Five? Is that Katie Holmes? No, that's Dawson's Creek.
Party of Five, Matthew Fox, Scott Wolf, Nev Campbell, Lacey Chabert.
Lacey Chabert. The first Meg on Family Guy.
And then Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Okay. Right.
Jennifer, what a throwback. Jesus. Let's see. Oh, yeah. So the fight goes back to the Power Core headquarters, where everybody thinks that they've won. Everybody thinks that they're celebrating. And then all of a sudden, Kogashuko shows up, right? And... Yeah.
And possesses Billy's brother.
Mm-hmm.
No, who he possesses Jimmy, right?
I thought it was Billy.
Billy?
I think it's Billy.
Okay. How did I not write it down? I have in my notes, he has brother because Shuko is possessing him. That's what I have in my notes. Like, oh, well, that's useful.
No, you're right, because he does possess Jimmy. You're right.
Yeah.
And then, but it was also, I read that they said that the wearer of the opposite side of the medallion is immune to the effects of the other medallion.
Yeah. There's a lot going on.
Yeah. I wish they explained the rules like they did in Gremlins about the medallion, but they really don't.
No. No, they spend the whole movie, like, rubbing it and trying to... That was a funny moment, is the moment where they're rubbing it and, like, it's the one guy...
With the tube, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's a typical boss fight. You know, you got Billy and Jimmy.
Do you think this is a nod to the video game of having to fight your own brother? It's like, well, we're not actually going to have them fight to the death, but we're going to include brother versus brother.
And then I didn't think about that. Throw them
into a Double Dragon game.
Yeah, I didn't think about that, but it might be. It sounds about right. I would definitely call it as a possibility. If they didn't put it in there like that, it's a happy coincidence. Yeah. You know?
It's like they're throwing more love to this than Mario Brothers was throwing their source material. How dare you. Much different situation there.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what actually, because does he not get both? He does. He gets both pieces of the. So Kogashuko gets both pieces of the medallion, and he turns into like this weird like shadow monster.
Yeah.
That can like split into two people.
Yeah, we get some real Terminator effects going on. Yeah. Like they're really throwing back to his Terminator days, and it's funny. This would have been the rough draft. Whatever they submitted to James Cameron, it would have been like, okay, this is where we're going to have him melting. But they're like, nope, first copy's good enough. That's what Double Dragon says. We've only got the $8 million budget. First draft's fine.
Yeah, yeah. Keep it.
Yeah, first pass, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, he turns. So Kogashuko eventually, like I said, reunites both halves as a single person, as a non Double Dragon, as an individual, who then turns into like a shadowy dragon dude who can split into two, who has these cool like mystical swords that can slice through and like disintegrate stuff. That was pretty cool. And then out of nowhere, the apparently spinach reformed Adobo,
yep,
yells out that his weakness is light, because apparently he's a creature of the darkness, a creature of shadow, which kind of makes sense. But at the same time, is this one of those times where like the powers match the person, you know? Because clearly,
well, I think that's why there was so much emphasis on the sunglasses throughout this movie. Was because he's valid. Even before he took possession of this medallion, he was a shadowy figure, perhaps. Like, maybe the whole, I don't know, if you're gonna be Voldemort, you gotta talk to snakes. Yeah. It's
maybe also because he had the medallion for so long, he was like turning into like a spirit type creature, because his spirit was dark and shadowy. Maybe that's, he just became more and more and more of a shadow.
So what I'm discovering is that this movie just basically borrows as much as it can from other,
oh, absolutely,
media sources. Like this is a vampire. Then he's kind of a vampire. He's, you know, some weird mystical Asian vampire is what we've got going on. I still can't even help but notice how much of this is like Demolition Man.
Yeah,
it just seems like there's influences from so many things in this movie that it's like, okay, sure, yeah, you're a little Mad Max, you're a little Demolition Man, you're a little
RoboCop,
a little Popeye because of the spinach. a Bobo becomes a hero with Popeye.
With the spinach.
And, you know, of course, the Terminator influence. Because if we've got Robert Patrick, we're going to turn him into something that's not Robert Patrick.
He didn't run like a weirdo in this, though, unfortunately. So Adobo yells out his weakness is light. Marion goes and reactivates the generator. The shadows are now powerless. Billy and Jimmy Lee attack. Having at this point, because of everything they've gone through, they are now like in sync, yin and yang brothers, I guess.
Yeah, they've still got their little lock and dock high lock five dock, going.
Yes.
Their lock and dock high five, and then they end up possessing Shuko.
Yes, yeah. So they get the medallions back from him, and they end up getting power of the body, power of the soul, or spirit, or however you want to say that. And yeah, I think it was Billy who goes and possesses.
Yeah.
And he
and writes the police department a check for $129 million.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that's actually like a thread throughout this movie that we never really mention much of, is the fact that there's always this little thing going on with the police chief. We always keep cutting back to the police station.
Yeah.
And they've got the whole, you know, are you cops with me or without me? And, you know, this is where all the police show up because they've got his back. Right, it was just the police chief, but now they've all got his back. And no, reporting for night shifts, sir. And they're now $129 million richer.
Exactly. We're going to build new fences.
Yeah.
Fix the fences around the precinct.
Oh, and of course, the Double Dragons, they do have their badass new outfits.
Jesus. They're very Elvis-inspired, blinged out, you know, juicy on the buttocks. I don't want to call them karate geese, but like, you know, they're Double Dragon uniforms.
Yeah, they've got shoulder pads of some sort, because they have to make sure that we've got some angles on the shoulders.
Yeah, so they combine two pieces, get the matching uniforms and the medallion powers, and this is when they see the Satori's Force Ghost.
That's right.
And that's weird.
But why not?
Why not?
Makes as much sense as the rest of the movie.
So, and then Shuko is obviously sent to jail, and he has the funny quote to say, I think he says, "You think I'm scary? Wait till you deal with my lawyers."
Yeah.
Which is stupid, but I thought it was kind of funny. Now Billy and Jimmy are now the double dragons.
Yeah, and they're about to drive off into the sunset, but Bobo wants to drive. But Jimmy thinks that it's Billy possessing the body of a Bobo, and so he's like, yeah, okay, you can drive. But then they find him, like, hiding in the back of the station wagon.
Yeah.
And they all scream. And we see Al Leong with a sign that says, "Will Hench for Food," which was a fun moment, I thought.
Now tell me this. Is there a post-credit scene that I missed again?
No. Okay. This time there was not.
I didn't see one. I'm just making sure I didn't screw up. Okay. Yeah,
no, I did not see a post-credit scene in this movie. So I was disappointed that the streak was broken. Our video game surprise early 90s post-credit scene streak was broken. One thing I did notice a lot of in this movie, though, was cigarette burns on the film.
Yes, absolutely. All the time.
Yeah. Like, it was, you know, thank you, Fight Club, for teaching us what a cigarette burn is in a movie. That's where you plug in the porn. You know, that's where you put in the one scene of one frame of porn.
One giant dong.
Yeah, I was noticing an incredible amount of them in this movie, and I'm like, wow, interesting. Stand out that much to me.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I noticed the same exact thing.
So, I don't know. For some reason, in this particular film, go back and watch for cigarette burns, because it is prominent and you can't unsee it.
Take a shot every time you see a cigarette burn.
Yeah. And they always come in pairs, folks.
Well, there you have it.
And speaking of which, there we go. That's Double Dragon. Now, Aaron, on IMDb, these are almost as low as what it earned at the box office. We've got a 3.9 out of 10 and a Metascore of, none listed. There's no Metascore listed for this movie. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 12% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 26%. But, Aaron, those are just numbers. Like, Double Dragon spinning hurricane kick windmill thing, whatever the hell that move was supposed to be. Hit us with some reviews.
All right, so I'm checking out IMDb's reviews this time, going for the user reviews, which I was really enjoying. A lot of, believe it or not, a lot of mention of cheese.
Cheese. It is a high cheese factor. Cheese Whiz was used to propel the car at one point. Yeah.
Yes, it's very lactose tolerant. Yes. You know? So this, I'm just going to say, Skeletor's Hood wrote, "It's cheesy, but remember, cheese is good too. Okay, it's not an Oscar winner, but few films are. It's a campy flick, but it's not the one to poke your eyes out to stop the pain campy, but rather in the realm of a guilty pleasure." So that's that, you know, he goes on a little bit further and said, "As far as video games movies is concerned, it's not the worst ever made. Mario Bros is still the king." I'm so mad that people still want to jump on this hype train.
I appreciate Mario Bros for what they tried.
"With Street Fighter in a close second and Final Fantasy in third place." Final Fantasy The Spirits Within was a pretty bad film, but not that bad. Let's see. Movie Misfit said, "I keep watching, but don't know why. One of my favorite childhood games gets the typical 90s Hollywood makeover and only just entertains for all the wrong reasons. You know, in a nutshell, embarrassing acting for most cast members, all but DeCascos, Wolf, and Nixon. That only adds to the unintentional humor, terrible makeup, costumes, and direction. Its only saving grace is its two gorgeous leading men who give us some decent fight scenes and a number of funny enough one-liners." Okay.
Two gorgeous leading men.
And honestly, one of the highest reviews that I found on IMDb was an 8 out of 10 review by a Thomas Jod. And he says, a great movie for a 5 to 10 year old karate fan. Very TMNT like. You have to take this movie for what it is.
Fair.
A mid-90s video game era and ninja-obsessed culture movie. Many people rate this movie bad because they are uptight adults. In reality, this movie is great for kids who like martial arts, etc. It's a good movie for kids who want to watch martial arts style movies, but without all the bad language and sex. Somehow, that gets bad ratings from the morons of today. I really like this guy. Yeah. The futuristic imaginary city, good gangs, and villain aspects are so good. Cheeky one-liners and cars with flames. My sons loved it. It was very much Power Ranger and TMNT feel. It's so 90s, and the movie had great casting. I agree with all that. I would never give this an 8 out of 10, but I absolutely agree with Thomas John. And this is definitely a movie that young kids can definitely, you know, really get into, you know?
Yeah, I never really thought of it that closely. Huh. He's given me a whole different perspective on it.
Absolutely. So I'm just going to read one. This is a 1-star, which is on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
This is the last one I'm going to read. I just enjoyed this one. Maybe this film should be renamed as Double Disaster. This adaptation not only failed to follow the source material... What source video? But the cheesy dialogue, plot, choppy editing and pacing, and wooden and stale performances made the live-action film rather clumsy. And that's from Derek on Rotten Tomatoes.
Right on.
So a good spread across the board. A lot of people, you know, you either like the cheesiness or you didn't like the cheesiness. You like the campiness or you didn't like the campiness. You like the fight scenes and the gorgeous lead men or you hated them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, with Video Game Month here, I appreciate, once again, the swing that this movie has taken. You know, I gave Street Fighter and Mario, I said that they should have given more of a swing. I mean, Mario, I you couldn't have given much more of a swing, but there were moments that I thought that they could have... But with this one, it's like they really did just fucking go for it. So they made more of a movie than I've ever made.
I would wholeheartedly agree with that. They definitely went. They took all the chances on this.
They took their why not?
Somebody
been
was like
a big sign that said "Why not?" a motivational poster.
Exactly, exactly. Somebody's like there was a suggestion box on set.
Yeah.
And they took it seriously.
How about a car with a furnace that they have to stoke?
Yes.
Why
yes.
not?
How about a giant cylindrical room with all the gang members and there's just, for some reason, smoke, you know, and wind?
Yeah, why not? Why not? I appreciate the swing. It's a terrible movie. It really is a terrible movie. Doesn't make a lot of sense, but... They went for it. The fighting was kind of legit. Some of the stuff was funny, I guess. It was stupid, mindless fun. It was... if a Bobo himself as a character was a movie, it is this movie. And whatever. Why hate? Why hate? Don't yuck my yum over here. We'll not. I was, you know, I had fun with it. It was stupid, and I probably won't ever watch it again, but I didn't mind revisiting this one so recently after only having watched it a couple years ago. Like, it's stupid. It was fun. It's
absolutely
terrible.
I would say the same thing. Like, this is one that I remember really, really enjoying quite a bit. And looking at it now, I'm just like, you know, maybe it's the month. Maybe it's the fact that we've been reviewing these movies. But there are a few things that are just like blaring issues that I don't know if I could have come. I think maybe give me a couple of years. I could come back and rewatch it. Give me a couple of years.
Yeah. When you're not watching it critically.
Yes, yes, because that's when you have your study glasses on and you're watching this film, you're just like, good God, this thing is horrible.
Yeah, the whole movie is a Mad Lib. Like, yeah, That's the why not of it. It's a Mad Lib called Why Not.
That should have been one of the taglines. Double Dragon, why not?
Yeah. This feels like something Netflix could do now that they've got all these interactive programming that choose your own adventure. You want a theater fire? Why not? Sure.
Why not?
Let's blow up this theater. Shadow Man? Okay.
Swords that just slice through anything? You got it.
Why not? Well, there we go. That's Double Dragon, and that's our show for this week. Oh, boy, if you like that show, help your boys out. Go give us some stars. Go over to whatever app you listen to your podcast on. Give us some stars. Help use science to drive us up the charts. Or just tell people word of mouth does a lot for a show. You just tell somebody, and then they tell somebody, and all of a sudden, oh, my God, you've got, like, millions of people listening to your show. You know, why not? Huh? Go tell someone. Why not?
Tell it on the mountain.
I mean, those are the free ways you can help a show, but if you want to, like, help us out a bit more monetarily, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. Throw us a couple bucks. Help out expenses on the show. I don't know. Now I sound greedy. You know, help your boys out. Whatever. You know,
help a brother out.
And you get a shout out, just like executive producer Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
Whew. Well, if you would like to contact or donate to the show, you can also email us at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. You can follow us on social media at IUsedToLikeThisOne on Instagram, or IUsedToLikeThisOne with numbers instead of words, because there's a character limit on Twitter. On social media, get the heads up on what our next movies are, what we're talking about, any topics, and that way you can watch ahead of time and keep up with us as we talk about it.
Right on. I Used to Like This One is hosted by and produced by Sean Wells and Aaron Knowles. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. If you want to hear more from me and my stories of being a bus driver, check out my other podcast, In Front of the Yellow Line, anywhere pods are cast. And Aaron, where can people find you doing your thing?
You can find me on the Oblivion Bar podcast at Oblivion Bar Pod on pretty much every social media platform. Or you can check me out as I run my nonprofit, which is at Shred the Stress on pretty much any social media platform. And that is my nonprofit to help out service members, veterans, and their families and their mental health using electric skateboards, electric bikes, electric scooters, whatever.
Okay, Aaron, I am excited for next week. Now, I cut it out of the previous episode because I didn't want people to know what our fourth movie was ahead of time. So I did cut it out because we did go on a little tangent at the end of last episode. But, you know, what do we have next week?
I'm going to be honest. I have absolutely forgotten.
Forgotten? Doom. We've got Doom.
Yes. That's why, because I keep watching it.
Well, yeah, because that's something you mentioned, is that you had just watched this movie recently just for fun. So
I have literally been, like, so recently I've been having an issue, like, finding stuff to, like, put on.
Yeah.
And for some reason, it's been, like, either Carl Urban Dread, today was, like, Sylvester Stallone Dread, or it's been Doom.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know why. So
yeah, finally getting out of the 90s for one of these video game movies. We're going to do the original first person shooter right there. Doom. Some of the young The Rock, Dwayne Johnson.
A little bit before, of Carl Urban. A little bit
before he even had the Dwayne Johnson on him.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Carl Urban, Rosamund Pike.
Yeah.
It's not a big cast, but definitely a fun one.
It's going to be a good time. Alrighty. Well, thank you for listening, and join us next week when we take a look at our last video game movie, Doom, on I Used to Like This One.
Doom.
I actually just watched that last night.
You did?